Welcome to All About Art. My name is Alexandra, and I'm an art historian, curator, and writer. Within this podcast, topics relating to art history, cultural policy, the art sector, as well as a large range of other art-related topics will be covered. Conducting critical discussions, having entertaining exchanges, or just enjoying some relaxing chats? All About Art is where you'll find it all. Join me in exploring and developing cultural discourse. Welcome to another episode of All About Art. In this episode, I had the joy of speaking to artist Stacey Gillian Abbé. The episode is coinciding with her solo exhibition at Unit London on Hanover Square. Within this episode, Stacey tells me about the works in the show and what inspires her practice. We chat about how she brings in autobiographical experiences and investigations of themes like identity, gender, and the black body. We also talk about the medium she uses, as she primarily uses paint, but has encompassed hand embroidery in this series, which is a new element in her work. These works evoke a strong relationship to the viewer, but they also exert their independence from the viewer through the poses and gazes of each subject. The exhibition is on until January 27th, 2023, so if you're in London, I definitely recommend you go see the show. Thank you, Stacey, for coming on the podcast and sharing your insights, and thank you to Unit London for the collaboration. Before I dive in, I wanted to let you lovely listeners know that All About Art is on Patreon. So if you want some behind-the-scenes content, maybe a bit of merch, the chance to get one-on-ones with me and my guests, or you're simply wanting to support this project, I would be absolutely thrilled if you decided to sign up. You can do so through the link in the show notes. I also wanted to say thank you to those who have already signed up. Your support means the world, and it makes the further production, improvement, and growth of the podcast possible. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful. And now, on to the interview. Hi, Stacey. Thank you so much for sitting down with me today. I'm really, really happy to have you on the podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I am going to dive right in with my first question, and I always like to start off with asking my guests about their background. You graduated in 2014 from Kayambogo. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Chambogo.
Thank you. Chambogo. From Chambogo University in Uganda, where you studied art and industrial design. And you have gone on to exhibit in solo and group shows all around the world. Please tell me and our listeners about your studies and your professional experiences thus far. I'm especially curious to hear about what it was like studying industrial design and how it may impact your practice today, if at all.
I've always had a passion for art and making stuff and working with my hands. And from a very young age, I was drawn to expressing myself through drawing, but also working with clay and just playing around with stuff and creating things. So when I joined secondary school, I was very, very interested in art. That was like one of my favorite subjects. And I thought, well, after finishing secondary school, it would be nice to continue with this passion. And so I joined the university and pursued art and majored in installation, sculpture, and painting.
Do you not feel like industrial design influences you at all? Is that something where you...
No, I don't think it does. Yeah. I wouldn't say it does, because after university and taking the courses I took, I realized a lot was lacking in my creative journey. So with a background in sculpture and installation and painting, as soon as I finished graduating, I wanted to do more, and I wanted to explore other modes and mediums of expression far from what I had learned in school. That drove my interest in exploring photography, installation, and performance in my work. And then later, towards late 2019 to actually early 2020, around the time of lockdown, is when I started painting again. But I don't think industrial design has a has had a huge influence in my creative process. Not actively, really.
I love that. I mean, I had Libby Heaney on, who is a quantum physicist, and she uses quantum physics in her art all the time. But one of my closest friends, Betty Leung, she worked in banking before retraining as an artist. And obviously her career in a bank doesn't influence her at all. It's something completely different that she takes from. So I think it's always interesting to talk about how people found their way into the arts and what inspires them.
It's nice that you say that, because now that I think about it, for me it was a process of unlearning so many things and learning and adapting new things and new ways of expressing my ideas. And I thought that would be a best way of opening up my mind mentally and emotionally. From the very beginning, I didn't want to box myself, put myself in one box. And I feel like it's also generally, it's very limiting for artists, for us to put ourselves in these tiny boxes. Then our minds are not blown up. We're not opening up ourselves to discovering.
The concepts within your practice, they draw on early and continuous autobiographical experiences while investigating narratives of identity, gender, spirituality, and cultural mysticism. In this exhibition at Unit Gallery here in London, which is why we're recording this podcast together. By the way, for listeners who would like to go see it, the show is on until January 27th, 2023. But in this show in particular, you explore emotions through shared memory, connecting to three generations in your lineage. Can you tell me more about that?
So memory is one of the core themes in my work, and I'm interested in memory because of its connection to history, but also because of its connection to Black history and how much of that history has influenced us as a Black people, but also how much of that has dragged on to today. And I'm also interested in the idea of immortalizing, when you look at it from a personal perspective, I'm interested in the idea of immortalizing my family histories through memory and how I can possibly archive them visually in my work. So memory also gives me an opportunity to rewrite history, because, like I said, memory is linked to history, and we only remember, we only associate with history through memory. But how do we remember these things? So for me, it's very important in my work, if I'm able to rewrite history and represent the Black body in a different way, then I imagine maybe years from now, you know, when probably I'm not, say 100 or 200 years from now, when I'm not existing, these memories are going to be read and interpreted in a different way.
You paint using acrylic on canvas.
Yes.
However, the works in this exhibition at Unit Gallery include hand-embroidered elements as well. So what does embroidery mean in your work?
I'll just take you back a bit and give you an overview of the essence of this collection that involves revisiting fragments of shared memories in my maternal, in three generations of my maternal lineage. But then emotion and time is also another core theme. And these themes, the entire body of work is very multi-layered. So each of these themes have, they break down into various elements. And embroidery also comes in under memory, but it comes in through a shared visual memory that I've experienced. And when I think about embroidery is representative in this work of femininity. I'm interested in the relationship between this very feminine craft. Traditionally, embroidery is a very feminine craft.
Absolutely.
But also the process of embroidering is very soft. It's calm, it's patient, much like the traditional idea we have of femininity. Soft, it's patient, it's delicate. Even the threads alone are very, you pull too hard and you know it will snap. So when the connection I have with embroidery is, it's a craft I'm still learning from my mother, who learnt it from my grandmother, who also learned it from my great grandmother. So it's like passing down of this memory.
Yeah.
But then there's also another side to this. How I remember embroidery is not how my mother remembers it. And this is something I discovered much later.
Mm-hmm.
So I was also interested in materializing this contrast in memory. For her, her memories of embroidering back then when I was a child were not happy memories, because it felt, it was laborious.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like something she had to do, she needed to do to survive, but to also provide for her family. And when I look back into my memories, the memories I have of embroidery with her were nice and sweet. I remember she'd sit down and start embroidering, and she'd hide her finished work from me because, you know, she was worried that I'd mess them up, I'd tear the threads or get pricked by a needle. So for me, it was always sweet. I remember like her face beaming down at me and saying, no, don't touch that. Don't do that. You'll get hurt. And now re-engaging with her through embroidery now, I realized she was in so much pain. It was like a labor of love. I was interested in discovering that now, it broke my heart. But I was also interested in how these contrast with the works in general. The subjects feel assertive, you know, they're taking up space, they're bold, they're unapologetic. But then there's also this side that we don't know, that we don't see, this side that I did not see, this side that was missing in my memory that I got to share with my mother now. The soft, the delicate side. It's embroidery again, also is symbolic here. It's a green light to remaining feminine, that look, you can be unapologetic, you can be assertive, take up all the space you want, and you can also be feminine, which is not as much associated with the black. When you think about the black body, femininity is not the first thing you think about in the mind, like subconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
The black body is strong, it's powerful. But hey, look, the black body can also be really soft and feminine, and it can just be that.
Yeah.
So this is the first body of work that I am embroidering in. And I think this is a layer in my body of work that will recur with the next, as I progress in my work.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Something that you said earlier is that there were a lot of different layers to this work.
Mm.
And before I move on to my next question, I just wanted to ask if there was anything else that you'd like to speak about, not just the embroidery, but if there's anything else that you'd like to concentrate on.
There is, actually,
mm-hmm.
which is cloth. Because cloth is, when you visit the show, you will notice there's a lot of fabric draping around the bodies. So besides embroidery, cloth is also another strong visual element in the work and a recurring element in the work. But when I think about cloth, just like indigo and the black body, it takes me back to the history of cloth,
mm-hmm.
and where it all began and its connection to the black body. Cloth, like indigo, the connection they both have to the black body is one of exchange. When you think of cloth and its origin and the raw material, which is cotton, we look at the history of cotton and the role the black body played in its production.
Yes.
And how that was significant in the exchange of the black body, which is also very similar to indigo. But then when you look at indigo as a substance itself, there's also a history to it that is not highlighted much. So for me, with cloth, I'm very interested in that history, but I'm also interested in the cultural significance that cloth holds for me. Cloth is an important item. We invest in cloth, but cloth is used to express our love for one another. Say, the best thing we would gift an elder from my village is if you gift them in cloth. You're giving them something they can use in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
They can save it and invest in it, or exchange it for something else, or really use it to Yeah, they can basically just do anything with it.
As we were speaking about the positioning of the black body throughout history and into the present day, and you mentioned it earlier just a few minutes ago, I would love it if you could talk about your use of indigo and why you use it as the dominant color to present the black body.
So my interest in indigo stems from the role it played in history, the role indigo dye, the substance, the role it played, and how it facilitated and helped in positioning the black body then. But I'm also interested in how much of that situation has affected our position as a black people now. So my use of indigo doesn't necessarily highlight this dark history. In simple terms, says I'm acknowledging this history and the association of the black body with this substance, but I'm also giving myself as a black person, I'm giving myself this space and this chance to rewrite that history, but also a space to reimagine the black body in a different light while creating and not forgetting this history and this role that it played, the substance that it played. When you think of indigo, you think about exchange and the black body. Back then, it was so valued that according to author Catherine McKinley, so she's the author of Indigo, In Search of a Color That Seduced the World. So somewhere she mentions that back then, one length of indigo was equivalent to one black body. So if you had enough indigo, you were able to own and exchange a black body for it. And because of that, black bodies were used to boost production. But then we were associated with the substance, but to a greater extent not allowed to embrace the substance. It was left for the elite. And when you think about the elite and the upper class, now this is where class and race also comes in the work, you know, discussions around class and race. When you think about the elite and the upper class, the black body is left out of this. So for me, I'm interested in revisiting this history and highlighting this past, but also reimagining the black body in a different light.
I would love to ask you about the figures in your works. How do you conceive their positions on the canvas with their body language, clothing, and gaze? Because sometimes the gaze is evading the viewer and other times the gaze is almost engulfing them.
So I'm going to talk about this from my the way I see it in my mind.
Yeah.
When I'm painting these figures, I position them in their spaces feel a bit intimate, but intimate enough to welcome the viewer. So by the time I paint them, I'm not deliberate with the gaze. I imagine a situation where the viewer is actually interrupt their gaze. I imagine it in a situation, I don't know if this will make sense, but have you ever moved around a room, you know, like looked around and then your eyes accidentally meet with a stranger?
Absolutely, yes. On so the tube, me, all the time.
Yes. So for me, I think about it in that way, that the subjects are not confronting the viewer, but that the viewer is given a chance to meet their gaze. And whatever happens in between is a conversation between the subjects and the viewer. So if for them, now these are complete different entities in their space. For them, it's unintentional. But how you meet their gaze will determine how you interact with them.
And how, in terms of the body language of the works, because they're positioned in different ways as well. And sometimes, I think, if I'm not mistaken, some are in the middle of something, some are, as you say, almost in other intimate scenarios, like on a couch or bed or things like that. What was going through your mind when you were deciding where to situate them?
For me, the first thing I thought about was calmness and remaining relaxed. Like I had said earlier, I think of a semi-intimate space where the viewer is allowed in, but enough not to create discomfort for these figures. So it's purely a posture of remaining relaxed and unfazed by anything around them.
So people are coming and interacting with the artworks, and it's almost as if, would you say that the figures within your works almost have a certain power to themselves, in the sense that they're not phased by everyone staring, by them taking in what's on the canvas? Yes. The figures are there and their presence has that.
They are expressing a bit of vulnerability because they're allowing the viewer to see them for who they are, to see them in those positions where they're not trying to hide or conceal or cover up anything.
Mm-hmm. There is that relaxation.
Yes.
They're not trying to do anything other than be.
Yeah, just be themselves.
And are the figures inspired by anyone, like in your family or from yourself? Or
so, because the work is very autobiographical, I feel like these are extensions of my being, but also extensions of imagine they are representations of what I would have wanted to be, representations of probably what I was and morphing into something else. They are extensions of myself. I see myself in each and every one of these subjects. I don't want to necessarily say that they are representative of people I know, because then for me I feel that limits our understanding of these subjects. They could be projections of memories. A memory does not stop at remembering a person. It could be a feeling. And I'm also interested in how this feeling materializes. Like, how do you personify an emotion? And in the work, the emotion, say for example, content or fear or anxiety, could materialize in form of one of the subjects. That doesn't necessarily have to represent a person I know.
And memory is also, because we were talking about this and how we talk about how personal memory is, and when you are personifying that memory, it is something that it's a part of you that you're also personifying, because it's your memory in a way.
Yeah.
One final question
to
end the episode, and it's a bit of a fun one that I like to ask all of my guests that come on the podcast.
Yeah.
If you could pick one artist from art history to have dinner with, who would it be and why?
I would love to have dinner with Vincent van Gogh. Why? Because I'm fascinated with his mind. I feel like he was a very controversial artist. I would love to pick his mind. He's one of those artists I would have loved to just enter. Like, I would want to enter his mind and figure out how he thinks and why he does what he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be Vincent van Gogh. Because I love his work. I love the textures and his use of color, but also how he thinks of the world. You know, how he represented the world in his work was very different and dreamy.
Yeah.
And looking at his paintings, I always imagined if everywhere he moved, if that's how he saw the world.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And it would be interesting to just step in his shoes for even a split second, just to see how he sees the world.
Well, Stacey, that concludes our episode. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, for sharing your insights. It was an absolute joy to have you on and to have you talk about your show and the series.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
And that is it for today on All About Art. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave me a rating or a review, as it helps more people discover the show. Also, feel free to share with your friends, or if you share on social media, tag me and get in touch. Thank you so much for listening.